peeps, welcome to the Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls podcast. I am your host, Luz Selenia, founder and owner of The Radiant Sessions, certified spiritual life coach and professional life coach, energy healer, meditation guide, and your priestess of sensuality.
Have you ever interacted with someone at church and it wasn't a pleasant interaction, or you just saw them and they just always so evil and ornery and angry and joked about them just needing some dick or some pussy? Did you know that in a study, when they compared married couples who identified as religious, Christian specifically here in the States, and those who did not, that Christian married couples had less sex on average than non-Christian married couples? Did you know that the average married couple has sex one time a week? Now, of course, looking at numbers and studies like this do not and cannot tell us causation. They can't really tell us what is going on in these couples' homes. So we can go ahead and just, you know, put to the side the people who have health issues and other extenuating circumstances that, in my opinion, also would exist in those couples who are also not married. I mean, who are also not Christian, but are married. So I think it would, in my, you know, unscientific opinion, they would probably equal out. And still, Christian married couples, on average, are having less sex than people who are not Christian. That's pretty sad, considering the God that we serve created sex for our pleasure, for procreation, and yet, you know, we don't enjoy the fruit of that gift as often as those who do not subscribe to Christianity as their religion, or maybe no religion at all. Obviously, the state of someone's relationship has a lot of variables, but this is Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls, and so we're going to talk about sex, and specifically in relationships. Now, of course, that was done with married couples. As you know, if you've listened to previous episodes, I have said this before, I do not believe inherently that sex is sinful outside of marriage. I don't believe sex is sinful inherently. Take that however you want. Do with that how I am not encouraging or discouraging anyone in any way, shape, or form. You have to come to that on your own. So for this episode, when I'm talking about sex and relationships, I am not specifically and only singling out married relationships. I'm talking about any relationship where sex is a part of it with two consenting adults. That's it. Sex is important, though. It is an important, and if you're doing it right, it's more than just a physical relief or release. Well, both. It's more than just a release or relief. It can be just that. It oftentimes is. For a lot of people, I would imagine, single, in a relationship, married or otherwise, part of the reason I think that people are not having more sex is that they're just using it as a release. That they don't understand, and to be quite honest, it's not really taught about the world of sex, the way that it has dimension and depth and layers, and you know, it's so rich. You might, you know, hear about those things if you read about Tantra. I've mentioned in the past, you know, using orgasms to manifest, and that orgasms open up a portal that makes manifesting easy in a lot of ways. And we've talked about the spiritual components of pleasure and sex, and how, you know, having sex doesn't mean you're more spiritual, but not having sex doesn't mean you're more spiritual either. Specifically for Black people and Black people in church, though, I would propose that the reason why, or a big part of the reason why we're not having sex, really is trauma. It's kind of accepting and also, you know, believing the anti-Black rhetoric and very white supremacist ideals about Black people, about Black people's bodies. It's respectability. You know, white slave owners would rape the enslaved Africans, men and women, both raped the enslaved Africans, both the men and women and children. And they created these archetypes, the sapphire, the mammy, these things about Black women to over-sexualize us, to create a defense for themselves, you know, specifically the male white slave owners who would sleep with, rape the enslaved African women, and would have to go then tell their wives, oh, you know, she came on to me, or, you know, like, she's the beast, and all of these things that aren't true. But if we really take a look at how we oppress ourselves, how we're still being oppressed by white supremacy and patriarchy, the things that we believe, the things that we teach our children, our, you know, men, boys, girls, women, the way that even Black men are sexualized, and, you know, they are considered to be Mandingo. You know, I'm sorry for the Black men who don't fit that stereotype, because I can imagine what that does to their psyche, especially because that is a lot of times considered, oh, that's a positive stereotype. Except nothing about that is positive, in my opinion, because it's still viewing Black men as a tool, as a thing, as not a complete human. But a lot of Black men haven't been liberated from that. A lot of Black women haven't been liberated from that. You see a lot of white women, again, I said a lot, not all, not every, I said a lot of white women who fetishize Black men because of that and many other things. But, you know, they like Black dick. They don't necessarily like Black men or Black people. They like Black dick. I bring all that up to say, we haven't done a great job in the year of our Lord 2022, as we approach 2023, of really undoing those beliefs that have been handed to us, that have been ingrained in our culture. There's a lot that we could do as we, you know, continue to spread our wings in media and expand ownership and being able to represent ourselves in those spaces. But what do we do in church? What do we do at our homes to make sure that we are not perpetuating these very harmful stereotypes that we take into our relationships, our marriages? What do? We have to ask ourselves these questions. We have to have these conversations about what those are and what they look like. So it's like knowing that when someone tells a woman that her dress is too short, as seemingly not harmful as that is, how that is rooted in all of these things that I just mentioned. That we will say, oh, that's too short. Why? Because we believe what white supremacy has said about us and our bodies. We have continued to give them the authority to define us in that way, to define what is appropriate and what isn't. And I know for some people that's hard. That's hard. That's going to be really hard to confront, because you're like, well, but I don't want to see her behind. Don't look. Well, but she's all shaking. Okay. And I can't, you know, she's in front of me and she's shaking her body and her dress is too short and it's rising up. I try not to look, but I can't not look because she's right in front of me. Okay. So why is her body shaking? Her shaking her body and her dress being shorter than you think it should be, even if you did see the top part of her thigh or her butt cheek, why is that inherently wrong? Why is that inherently sexual? Why is anyone's body part being relegated for just sex? You see that with the fight for women to be able to breastfeed their children in public and not have to cover up if they don't want to. We know that breasts are not just for sex. We know that it lactates if your body is operating in a way where it is able to lactate. We know that. Which means it's not an inherently sexual part of the body. But even if we've gotten better at not shaming and judging mothers for feeding their child, if a woman just took her top off and there's no child attached to her breast, people would have a fit. They've had to be laws put in place that says, well, if men can go topless, they have nipples. A lot of them have breasts. I think medically, they all have breasts, even if it looks different. But we've seen some men with titties. Then women should also be able to go topless, because why not? If women have to cover up, then men should have to cover up. Right? And so we want to think that these things do not impact our sex lives. And they do. We really do not compartmentalize as well as we think we do. The stats are showing it. Christian married couples are not having a lot of sex. In my opinion, ain't nobody having a lot of sex, because one time a week on average, that's bare minimum over here. Like, and here's the thing. Again, it's not even just about the physicality of it. Absolutely. Physically, you get somebody who knows what they're doing and you know what you're doing. Physically, it is mind-blowing. But good sex also includes a whole lot of other things. Things that, in my opinion, are simply and very representative of like a very basic definition of what a healthy relationship is. Honesty. Trust. Respect. Open communication. There's no imbalance of power. Unless you consent to that imbalance of power. But even then, if we're talking about a dom sub dynamic in that way, we know, as we learned in our kink conversations, that the sub might seemingly have less power, but they are actually very, very powerful. Because the moment that they want it to stop, it's over. Both partners, or more than one, they take effort. They put in effort. There's compromise for the parties involved. They respect each other's independence. They respect that each party can make decisions on their own without fear of retribution or retaliation. And they share in decision making. If we approach sex like that in our relationships, using those as pillars, if you can do that in your sex life, then you also have what it takes to have a healthy relationship outside of sex. Honesty, trust, respect, open communication, effort, compromise, respect, independence, sharing in decisions. I find that a lot of people, we're playing roulette when it comes to sex. Maybe we just want it. Maybe the chemistry is good. And we taking a chance. And if y'all vibing, all right. But what happens in a relation, in an actual committed relationship? Or maybe not a committed relationship, but what happens when you begin to have sex with someone on a consistent basis? Maybe you get lucky, and it's always good every single time. I don't think a lot of people would say that that's their truth. And we get turned off. Some people decide, I'm done. I'm going to find someone else. And you're hopping around to find who's the next best thing. Even for some of you married people. Because, of course, again, that study does not say, oh, well, these married couples, these Christian married couples ain't having sex. But, you know, they're having sex less than once a week. They're not talking about all the people who step outside of their marriage. Yes, Christian couples who are having sex outside of their marriage to meet that sexual need because there is an incompatibility in their marriage. And a lot of it is, you know, you could talk and be honest and say that and the other and realize, oh, we want very different things sexually. We are not compatible. But I would venture to say that there are a lot of people who are not having those conversations to even find out whether or not they are actually incompatible. A lot of that shame that we carry, that trauma, that sexual trauma that we carry, that we continue to pass on to the generations behind us, breeds shame. And that shame makes it very hard, damn near impossible, if you don't heal from that shame, to speak up on both sides. It's not just women. There are a lot of men who are not enjoying sex with their female partners, their women partners. And because it's, you know, we can have ego too, and they're supposedly supposed to enjoy it just because we have a vagina. Oh, you know, as long as she opens her legs. So it's not necessarily a great environment on either side to actually have those open, honest conversations about what we want, what we like, what we don't like, what we would prefer, what we want to try. Because, I mean, if you're having less than the average amount of sex a week than non-Christian couples, then I dare say that you also are not having adventurous, experimental sex either. You're not trying new things. You're not bringing in toys. You probably not even have sex in your car outside. Are you going on vacation and having sex in a hotel? Like, what are you doing? Or maybe that's why you're only having sex less than once a week, because you're only saving it for those special times instead of creating special moments. What are some of the benefits of sex and relationship? And again, not just any sex, not just sex that we do just to have it done, not just sex that we do just to release. So psychologically, sex can help to boost your self-esteem and reduce feelings of insecurity. Consensual sex and better quality sex can also increase rates of happiness. Brain chemicals such as endorphins and dopamine and oxytocin are released during sex, which increases bonding and closeness with your partner, as well as fostering a sense of calmness and contentment. And it also can help lower chronic stress. It actually can be an effective stress management technique when done properly, because sex reduces stress response hormones like cortisol and adrenaline. It also can improve your sleep quality. Physically, sex is also a form of exercise. Again, if you are doing it properly, it is physical activity. It enhances your brain function. A 2018 study of over 6,000 adults linked frequent sex with better memory performance in adults ages 50 and older. It improves your immune function. It lowers pain levels. Having sex for 30 minutes burns an average of 200 calories. It also The rewarding brain chemicals released during sex can also help to subdue food cravings and support weight loss. Positive cardiac effects are the fact that penile and vaginal sexual activity have been linked with lower systolic blood pressure. And for those of us who menstruate, frequent intercourse can also be associated with lighter menstrual periods and less painful period cramps. It can improve your sense of smell, healthier teeth, better digestion. Glowing skin can also be related to the release of the hormone DHEA by the body after orgasm. So as much as orgasm is not always the end goal in every sexual situation, having regular orgasms, a lot of us be glowing, and it's because you orgasming, whether it's by yourself or whether it's with someone else. And as a Christian woman, I praise and love a God who not only creates sex for the procreation of the human race, but is so much of a mastermind that he would create something like this that would have so many benefits for all of us on so many levels. Like, are you not mind blown? Do you not want to worship a God who would even be so mindful of our sex life and the pleasure that comes from it, but also the psychological and physical benefits that come from having not just sex, but regular sex, frequent sex, pleasurable sex? Because a lot of those things were dependent on it being something that they enjoy, something that both parties, or more than one party, if you get down like that, are enjoying. Like, how dare us minimize something so beautiful and so powerful? So, all right. Now you're like, okay, I get it. We should be having more sex. We should be having more amazing, mind-blowing sex. Because remember, one, sex is not about what you can do to me or even what I can do to you. Sex is about where we can take each other. It's about the journey, the experience. So, how do we have better sex? How do we have more sex? We gotta remember the principles of a healthy relationship. You gotta be able and be empowered to make it clear about what you want. Good, effective, compassionate communication. When it comes to sex, when it comes to the relationship, period. That means that you have to have a self-awareness to some level about what it is that you want to be able to communicate that. And if you are so divorced from your own desires, then communicate that. And with a trusting person, if you're not married, and hopefully your partner, if you are married, is a trusting person, say, hey, I don't know, but I really want to discover. I want to explore. I want to experiment. And if something isn't hitting it, then you let them know. And you create boundaries and safe words to say, oh, if I say this, yeah, we got to stop right now. Have check-ins. Don't rely on just talking about sex when you're about to have sex. That's probably one of the worst times to have really deep conversations. Like, of course, when you're, oh, no, this way, go to your left. Ooh, no, right there. No, stop, slow down. Oh, that feels really good. Oh, I like the way that feels. Ooh, more tongue, less tongue. More hands, less hands. Have those conversations. But the deep, real deep conversations, don't wait for having sex to do those. Schedule time to check in. Specifically about this. There are increasingly amount of people that I'm seeing that are actually scheduling time every week or every month. I know this one girl on TikTok talks about her partner and her having a check-in for 30 minutes every single week, and the questions rotate. You can decide what cadence and what format is best for you and your partner or partners, but ultimately, intentional communication is also very important. Play your part. Ladies, women, femmes, sis, do not rely on your partner, man or otherwise, to be the person who is solely responsible for your pleasure. I tell people that I was, you know, a quote unquote late bloomer and losing my virginity, giving my virginity, deciding to no longer be a virgin at the age of 23. And up until my sexual trauma and sexual abuse by my ex-boyfriend and being, you know, violated and raped and sexually assaulted, I actually hadn't had really bad sexual encounters. And I think a good part of that, you know, hey, they were good in bed. But a good part of that, probably the bigger part of that, is that I was at an age that I made one a choice And two, that I took responsibility and ownership for my enjoyment and my pleasure anytime I had sex with someone, other than when that choice was taken away from me. But when I was making a choice, I wasn't just receiving, very passively receiving, just like, oh, yeah. Consider scheduling time together. If you're really having that hard of a time to have regular sex, don't be turned off by the concept of scheduling sex. The hustle and grind culture that our society has us in a vice grip with, like, it can be really hard. If you have children and jobs and commitments and this and any other, and you're tired and this any other, a lot of times if you're already not having great and regular sex, sex is going to be at the bottom of the list. And when you're scheduling that time together, that intimate time, whether it's about sex or just intimacy, which if you don't know that those aren't necessarily one and the same, then there's another issue. Also consider what it's going to take on both sides, not just on the woman, but if you're in a heterosexual relationship, especially if you live together, married, have children, don't put it on one person to make this happen. Don't put it on one person to get the house ready, get the room ready, schedule the dates, this, that, and the other. Go at this as a partnership. You have kids, and she is consistently expected to get the kids together, find a babysitter, make sure they got this, make sure they got that, clean the house, cook the food, wash the clothes, etc., etc. And you walk in as a man and be like, I'm ready to go. And as much as, even if you've scheduled this time and she's worn out and you're mad because this is the time that we scheduled to do this. But again, sex starts way before intercourse. I've had men in my inbox asking me, like, my wife doesn't want to have sex with me. I've asked her if she's not attracted to me anymore. Can you help? And I'm like, what kind of help are you looking for? And I was like, because me going to your wife and saying, hey, your husband wants to have more sex, it's not going to go over well. And generally, what I tell them is to look at the load that she's carrying. And what are you doing to be a partner? And if you are being a good partner, then what are you doing to romance her and start foreplay even before you actually physically touch her? Do you actually show affection to her in her preferred way, physically or otherwise, when it's not directly connected to you wanting to have sex? Or is it just a means to an end? Do you actually like your wife and want to show her how beautiful she is? Again, I'm using a cishet marital couple as an example, but take it as you see fit. Because over time, and for some of us almost immediately, that is not cute. That is not going to inspire us to fuck you silly or fuck you at all. There are some amazing toys out here that are doing great jobs that don't make our lives harder or make us feel bad. Just saying. Take it out of the bedroom. Like, your bedroom should be your sacred space. But, you know, again, like, try something different. If you have kids, I know that might be a little... So get a hotel room. Go find some very, very isolated place. Please don't get arrested. And go have sex in your car. Like, be adventurous. Prioritize intimacy over sex. Again, if you're doing it right and you're attracted to each other and there aren't medical issues, if you're scheduling time to be intimate with each other, sex is going to happen. If you enjoy touching and kissing and worshiping each other's bodies, and it's not, again, directed at the end goal of penetration, and you can learn to enjoy that, you could be there for hours. And one, not get tired, because again, it's not solely about penetration. And two, you just might get more of it. Of course, that's not, for most people, that's not realistic on an every single time occasion. But every so often, you need to have sessions like that. And this is for both parties, for men and women, or for non-binary. Like, you gotta really deal with your thoughts about sex, because I know that there are a lot of women who be like, oh, let's just get it over with. And if you're asexual and you're in a relationship with someone who isn't, God bless you. But if you're not asexual, you know, maybe you need to talk to a therapist. There are sex therapists out there. Maybe you have some trauma that you need to deal with. Maybe you need to decolonize and deconstruct your belief around sex and to free yourself so that you can actually enjoy it and not see it as just another task, another chore to give to your spouse. Try toys. Masturbate together in front of each other. Don't rush foreplay. Try new positions. Get on Google. I promise you, they'll show you all the little images and how to do it and laugh. Like, sometimes you try a new position and, oh, that joint funny, it hurt, whatever, laugh. Have fun. That can be sexy, too. Don't be afraid to initiate, ladies. In whatever way you can think of, send them a note, send them a picture. Masturbate, record the audio and send it to him and tell him, hey, make sure you put on your headphones when you listen to this. Find what makes you feel sexy. I know men will be like, oh, we don't care about lingerie. We gonna take it off anyway. We just trying to have sex. Like, y'all stop it. Romance. And ladies, like, if lingerie makes you feel good, wear it. Wear it under your dress. Wear it under your suit. Wear it around the house. One of my personal tips is, if I am about to do something that maybe I'm a little nervous, a little anxious about, I will wear lingerie under it. No one has to know. It's not for anyone else. It's for me. Feeling sexy for me is very powerful. And I love lingerie to help me do that. I don't need it, but it definitely is a tool that I use on a very frequent basis. Understand that sex can and will often change over time. If you've been with your partner for a long time, you're likely not going to be having the same kind of sex that you might have had when you were in your 20s or 30s. And that is beautiful. That's okay. Again, like our relationships, our sex lives, our sexual relationships can and should evolve. It should deepen. It should become more potent. As we grow, we should understand ourselves even more. We should have more freedom to express ourselves openly and honestly, and the autonomy to know. Is autonomy the right word? The ability to know when we're in a safe place where we can be open and honest about what we want, about what we need, about what we like, and what we enjoy, what we're willing to do, what we're not willing to do. So in this holiday season, my wish, my prayer for you is that you have not just more frequent sex, but better sex that inspires you to have more sex frequently. So this has been episode 10 of Sex and Sensuality for Church Girls, and I am your host, Lucilenia. Before we get out of here, I want to invite you to a very special session inside of my private and very free, for the time being, Facebook group, the Radiant Session Society, called Unleash Your Radiance. It is happening inside the group for members only on Wednesday, December 14th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I hope to see you there. The link is in the show description. As always, be as radiant as the sun. Love you. Mwah.